This is the Her Earth Medicine podcast, based around traditional Eastern medicine and naturopathic insight to support wellness and longevity. My name is Sandy Ross, and I am a naturopath and practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Okay, welcome back to the Her Earth Medicine podcast, Phil.
Hello, thank you.
Thanks for joining us again for this part two of Shen. Can we maybe start by discussing how you started to treat Shen in clinic?
Yeah, sure. So Shen for me came with a personal element. I had an aunt with bipolar disorder. And so that was kind of what put me down that pathway of thinking about how do we look at bipolar in Chinese medicine terms. And also then thinking about this idea of being rooted in the Shen. There's a chapter in the Ling Shu Ben Shen, rooted in spirit. And it says that all needling must be rooted in the spirit. And it's a really interesting thought to me in that if we think linear, like going from point A to point B, it kind of arrives at this idea that, oh, that must mean all illness comes from the Shen, which I can see where people come from. You know, there's a lot in the world where our minds lead to illness, but for me, I think it's a little bit too, sort of one route thinking in a way. You know, if someone breaks their leg, that's not a disorder of the spirit. And there's certain things that are just caused by nothing Shen related, but actually it's a very physical thing. Mm-hmm. And that's really a way I think we have to think more broadly about Shen problems, emotional problems as well. And really that's where going down that route for me was, like, I took that path where I thought, oh, everything's a part of the spirit, and so started treating that way, but then realized that actually every time you put a needle into a patient, you're treating the spirit. But even if you're not treating the spirit, because the medicine doesn't cut bits off and say, oh, that's the spirit and that's the body, that's being truly holistic, is seeing that when you put a needle in, it affects people on all levels at once. So the cause and effect of Shen is less of a thing, but the actual experience of needling someone requires us to engage our spirit, to engage, I think I said in the first one, this sort of 3,000 years of history, to bring it in so it's at the tip of the needle as we insert it. We're doing it with all these 1,000 years of Shen development, but also it's clinical reasoning. Like, clinical reasoning is Shen. That's how it's rooted in the spirit. And then there's the element of engaging the patient Shen to take care of themselves better and refining their thinking and giving them new information. Much in a, you know, psychotherapy is a way of retraining people. And we have a model that we retrain people's thoughts in some sense about how we view the world, which helps them to then take their treatment forward. That's really where I've arrived at in terms of treating the Shen and what we're doing when we're treating it.
So can you define what Shen means to you?
Probably not, because it probably changes day to day. For me now, rather than this old kind of idea of like spirit and it being very much a spiritual thing, I very much moved into a what's the practical application, what's the day-to-day understanding of what Shen is. There's an Alan Watts quote about that it's from Zen, and he says Zen spirituality doesn't confuse thinking about God whilst peeling the potatoes, it's just peeling the potatoes. And for me, that's very much in the spirit of Chinese medicine, as we're not thinking, oh, there's something outside of ourselves that would have been in very old definitions of Shen from, you know, 1500 BCE. Shen was very much a spirit, something outside of ourselves, the spirits of mountains, the spirits of rivers, the spirits of trees. Confucius, in that sort of warring states period, brought in rational thinking. So qi is considered rational thinking. And I would say that my definition of Shen is more about sort of understanding from a point of view of consciousness. So it's our conscious awareness, our ability to think freely and to question ourselves and our judgment and to tune into different ideas and then see those clearly. And I don't have like a small boxed off idea at the moment, but it's very much a consciousness idea rather than there being some external spirit, I would say, at the moment.
Nicely put. Yeah. So, I mean, one thing I love about the Shen and being able to, as a clinician, explain it to or talk to your patients about the aspects of the Shen is how they're, you know, that psycho-emotional, those psycho-emotional aspects lead to, you know, physical manifestations in the body. And, you know, there's not really another modality or a thought pattern of medicine. Ayurveda, in a way, has their components that do it as well. But, you know, modern medicine, even naturopathic medicine, doesn't really link the quality of the thoughts and the emotions and how that can actually manifest as illness. So that's where I've always found the Shen to be such an amazing thing as an education tool. So understanding for me, but also to help my patients understand how they got to this point in their life.
Yeah. I think there are some ways on that note, ways in our language that we talk about it though. We say someone's carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders, right? When they're really stressed out. And then you see someone come in and they've got the weight of the world on their shoulders, like figuratively or metaphorically. But you look at their patterns and they've got liver qi stagnation. And they're in this manifestation of their shoulders are up. So their upper traps on their gallbladder channel are completely contracted. And their mind is stuck in this place of overthinking the way that all these aspects of their life are burdening them. Or we'd say, for example, eating our heart out. Mm. You're eating your heart out is really when you've got that much heart fire, like that broken-hearted feeling where you're just kind of chewing things over and over. And you think about how people are when, you know, they've had heartbreak, like hit the ice cream kind of thing. All of these little phrases that we have day to day actually tell us a story about the Shen, even though we don't do it rationally, but they are there in what we kind of say day to day, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, liverish when we're scared and we wet ourselves, or holding on to shit emotionally, and we have that, you know, large intestine connection there with constipation. Yeah, definitely.
Let go of your shit.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the key ones.
Okay, so for our like student practitioners tuning into this podcast, let's break it down. Let's keep it, you know, so they can really gain something out of your knowledge of Shen. Can we maybe discuss a little bit about the common, maybe start with three of the common pathophysiologies you see around, you know, Shen disharmonies in clinic? What do they look like?
Sure thing. So first one would be the one that everybody sees also often, the liverwort invading spleen earth, which is the pattern where you've got an excess in the liver system and an overbearing via the Shen Ke cycle onto spleen earth. And this is where we get to hear a lot about qi stagnation or liver qi stagnation and qi constraint. There's a really great article by Volker Scheid, who is kind of a scholar practitioner here in the UK and Germany. He talks about constraint and the different kinds of constraint. There's an element in Chinese medical thinking where we go, okay, we have constraint, someone is constrained, and then a lot of students suddenly translate emotion of this constraint into, oh, that means depression. So liver qi stagnation equals depression, or liver qi stagnation equals emotional disharmony. And I think, again, that's something else we have to think of, and it's probably a good one for students to be aware that they're falling into this, I'm swapping TCM language for Western biomedical language or psychotherapeutic language, because you're going to have depression, for example, from you know, heart-yang deficiency. You know, when someone's heart fire has really gone out, that can be depression. Mm-hmm. You can get depression from any of the patterns in some sense. It's just what's going on in that moment that is expressing itself for liver qi stagnation. So that's something to remember on that point. The qi stagnation of liver wood, I always tend to think of that character from the chapter in Chuangzi, which is the free and easy wanderer.
Mm.
And on a herbal perspective, we have Xiaoyaoan or Xiaoyaosan, which is free and easy wandering pill. And so really, when I see a person who has got this kind of manifestation in practice, what I'm thinking of is someone who's very stuck in their life. And so in the previous episode, we talked about what happens when the liver doesn't move, a lack of inspiration, a lack of vision to see outside of our world. We end up being sort of blind to all the possibilities. And so constraint, when someone comes in with this qi stagnation pattern, you almost see people are stuck in their life and they don't know how to change it. And they don't know how to change it because they're stuck. And they're stuck because they don't know how to change it. So they have this chicken or the egg kind of way of seeing the world, where they try and a bit like, I don't know if you ever watched The Simpsons. There's an episode in The Simpsons where Homer gets stuck in quicksand, and he bends forward to try and get himself out of the quicksand with his feet, with his hands. And it's like, that's what we're doing when we're in stagnation and constraint. Nothing that we do seems to pull us out. We can't pull ourselves out of it. And so what we're really trying to do with constraint is to move someone's chi for them, to enable them to move out of the problem themselves. But the key thing that you might see with that, depression can be a sign. You can see that someone struggles to connect with something that gives them meaning or joy, so they're disconnected, so their mood drops, but they lose interest in everything. So there's no connection to any of the things that normally find connection to in life. For example, relationships or hobbies, interests, work. Someone very much would come into clinic and be not finding any joy or love in what they're doing. Now, you could then take that into, oh, this is a heart pattern. And there could be an element of that, but we've really got to think of the manifestation of constraint. And that's where the pulse diagnosis comes in, I would say. It's tricky, you know, COVID has left us diagnosing online, and pulse diagnosis, I realized, is so key that there's been a few times where I think I need the pulse because I don't really know. Obviously, you can't be doing acupuncture online. Well, maybe some, you know, maybe some acupressure. But really, you know, if we're talking herbs, I found there's a few times where just pulse needs to be there. But the key factor really is going to be that wiry or tense pulse in the liver position. Then on the right side, in the spleen position, there's an interesting thing that happens where sometimes with this pattern, the spleen pulse is full. So you feel wiriness in the spleen. So the liver sort of stagnation and excess is showing an excess in the spleen and stomach, which would bring with it dampness, for example, or would bring with it maybe more rebellious chi, like a nausea, because it's going into the stomach channel rather than into the spleen channel. Or the other way is you get the deficient pulse, and that's more of a spleen chi deficiency, spleen chi sinking kind of pattern, where with that you might see more of the lower digestive complaints, like a loose stool or bloating, that kind of thing. So the differentiation there can be quite key. But that would be the key clinical thing that I'm always looking for, really. Treatment-wise for this pattern, I mean, the one point for this pattern is liver 3, Tai Chong, great rushing, you know. You really, if you get really good sensation on liver 3 for this pattern, you can have someone feel like they've had a bucket of water thrown on their legs, because the sensation that moves through the body, it's like shaking someone out of their own skin sometimes. Mm. And thinking it from that perspective, what else would I bring in? So you could do 4 gates. You know, we strongly want to move chi and blood. Sometimes what I'll do is my favorite point, which is Nei Guan, which is pericardium 6. Mm. I call pericardium 6 my Bob Marley point. Because when I was training, I was really stressed out. I'd go back home, and when we were allowed to needle pericardium 6 and put Bob Marley on and sit there and have a little chill with Bob Marley and pericardium 6. But I'll tell patients that as well, like, oh, do your Bob Marley point today. But I'll sometimes take out large intestine 4 and add in P6 instead, or sometimes do both. But I think what you get with P6 is there's a more calming sort of focus for the Shen, and because it moves chi in the chest as well, you're still moving liver chi, but you've got that that combined action on the Jueyin from 6 stages. So you're moving chi at that deeper level rather than looking at the chi and blood aspect, which you get from LI4 and liver 3. Sanyin Zhao, which is spleen 6, is a really great point because that focuses on both tonifying the spleen and soothing the liver chi as well. Other element to think about is when we look at a disharmony, there's usually going to be, if we look at what the presentation is in the books, is that there's blood deficiency on top of the stagnation, and then there's also dampness. So if you were thinking about points for blood deficiency, something I always encourage students to consider is, how are you going to put more blood in using an acupuncture needle? Can you really tonify blood in the sense of having an empty bucket and pouring more in with an acupuncture needle? I have to question that. It doesn't seem possible. What I do think we can do with acupuncture is make the body, via the digestive system, more efficient at producing blood. That's more than possible, because if we think about functionality, that's what we're adjusting with an acupuncture needle. Now, if we tonify the spleen, it makes the spleen better at processing food. Processing food means the Gu Qi is better transformed into blood. And also, because the spleen Qi has been so depleted, it produces less dampness. So there is like a refining, a fine-tuning of the digestive system which allows for that. But I think really to nourish blood, it needs to be the diet or herbs.
Yeah.
One or the other.
I'm so glad you touched on that. It's so important, I think, for our students to understand that, because a lot of them are trying to build blood just with acupuncture and moxa, And, you know, there are some studies out there with Deborah Betts just doing stomach 36 and bladder 17 and getting good results. But, yeah, it's the mechanism and how we make the blood with the chemical components of the food and the herbs in the body to be able to actually build off it. So thank you for touching on that, definitely.
I mean, it makes sense to me that, you know, we should be able to refine the process and get the engine working more efficiently. And Moxa, for example, is going to warm chi, tonify chi in that sense. So it could work, but I still think, well, if someone's that stagnant and their diet and everything is that terrible, because usually when you lose interest in one thing, you lose interest in everything.
Mm.
You don't just sort of, I'm living a healthy lifestyle and I'm just stagnant and I'm not eating anything. You know, people end up eating the worst foods, like, oh, what have you had to eat? Chocolate bar, or things that don't have any nourishment in them. Where is blood going to be created from? Just using an acupuncture needle isn't going to turn really bad food into what our body needs to really function. So,
Or they're eating lots of salads and that's causing, you know, putting out the digestive fire in which they can't build blood then. So, you know, because some people are, I guess I see more in that naturopathic world, a lot of people being super healthy, obsessively healthy. And that can create the stagnation coming from, you know, the coldness that puts out the fire and the, yeah, being stuck in the mind, the constant thinking of the obsession around food and everything too. So that orthorexia pattern.
Well, you see those people as well because they come in, they're obsessed as well. Their vision is clouded because they think that being healthy is I'm going to go and run 5K every day and beat myself to death with exercise and beat myself to death with super healthy food. Like being too healthy is actually kind of unhealthy in a way. In fact, on that note, yesterday I was listening to, I was reading, do you know The Angry Therapist? He's won't go too far, but anyway, he's talking about reconnecting with yourself. And a way that you can really reconnect yourself is just sometimes you just need to eat a donut. And I was realizing yesterday I was like, I'm really actually being too healthy. I just went to Krispy Kreme and got a donut. I was just like, right, I need to do that. Just to have a bit of like naughty in my life because you can get stagnant.
Totally. Yeah.
And moving stagnation via exercising too much is a huge thing, especially in fertility medicine.
Mm.
You see so many women who come in who are over-exercising because their chi is stagnant in the constraint pattern, and their response has been, well, if I run harder, run faster, I'll feel better. But that's depleting for the spleen chi, and that depletes blood, and that's really not good for fertility medicine, you know?
Yeah, well, they're usually the most healthy people in the world, fertility clients, you know, the women trying to conceive, they're doing all the things right. It's their psycho-emotional aspects that, you know, that manifest as that pattern we see. So, yeah, definitely. How about another common pathophysiology that you see?
Common one, I'd say, would be the extension of that pattern, which is the liver fire.
Okay, do you want to go into that?
Where you take it to the other extreme. I think I've seen more of this, I think, through lockdown, really. I think I've seen a lot more people because that stagnation has turned into, you could almost call it, what would you call it? Sort of the, you know, the extreme polarized thinking. So everyone in the world has got something to be angry about now. And that anger is getting bigger and bigger, explosive. And so they don't always come to clinic, but there's a few people I've seen over the past sort of 18 months, particularly as it's condensed down in lockdown here. Like in Manchester, we've been locked down pretty much constantly since last March. And people are like caged animals.
Mm.
And I think that's the vibration of being stuck like a kettle on a stove on the pot, just building and building and building. And we see it in the modern world with with how everyone, I'm not sure if it's like this in Australia, but in the UK, we're very polarized. You're either on the like pro-Brexit side or the pro-Remain side. You're either in the sort of the Liberal Party, or you're in the, we don't have a Liberal Party necessarily, but you're in the sort of far left party, or you're in the far right party almost. Mm. Everything's turning into this really polarized debate, which isn't very healthy. And so not in a polarized world as a cat, right? Just, but when we look at a point like Liver 2, which is Walk Between, is one of its sort of names. To be able to walk between is to be able to stand in the middle of both sides of a worldview and see the middle ground, you know, the middle way. And taking the middle way is very much a healthy aspect of the Shen, is that we're able to see the gaps in our thinking. We're able to see how we're not seeing the full picture. But when you go into that fire perspective from either way, you stop being able to see, because the fire clouds your judgment.
Mm.
You don't see the wood for the trees anymore. And so modern world, everyone's angry on Facebook. Everyone's fighting with each other about something all the time. Like, at the minute, the big thing is people getting angry because they're convinced that the government's trying to kill us with the vaccination program and all of that kind of thing. And I really think that's where liver fire, where that cheese stagnation has transformed and it's just gone full on fire.
Mm.
Really, really intense. So what you see in clinic with that is people who really, they take over the conversation. You don't really get to ask them questions because they're just venting.
Mm.
Just unleashing their fury at you. And they're probably a little bit red in the face. The pattern that you used to see would be like the guy with who drinks too much beer, who's got like the beer gut going on, eats too much greasy food, and he's red in the face, red eyes, almost looks like steam is going to be coming out of his ears. That's the kind of character that I used to expect. But recently, I remember seeing someone who you would see them as a spleen qi deficient sort of patient, but she had this deep anger, like deep, deep anger that I didn't really see until we started getting a couple of emails about things. And like, oh, that's where your fire is. Your fire is hiding. Like, there's something in you which is raging, really raging. Yeah, it will just be that a thing that comes with that is people don't take responsibility.
Mm.
People see the whole world around them as the problem because they can't see themselves and how they play a part and how their worldview is so blinkered by it. So treatment-wise for that, if you think you really want to drain liver fire, your main focus really would be liver 2 as a point. I always combine, think about how does that liver fire make it up to the head. One of my favorite point combinations, and I really think I must have a lot of really liver sort of excess pattern people come, because I always like to use like gallbladder 41, which is foot near to tears, and or gallbladder 42 sometimes, and Sanjiao 5 or Sanjiao 6, which came from, do you know the Applied Channel Theory book, Wang Juyi? Like, that's my favourite Chinese medicine book. Not just because of the palpation, because that book merges together tuinar and acupuncture and shows you how we palpate the landscape. Mm. But also some of the points in there are really amazing, and how he uses the points. So I'll combine quite often in my treatments the combination of TCM understanding of liver fire. So for that, I would think, well, okay, we use liver to drain the liver. What's the paired channel with the liver? Again, pericardium from the six stages. So I'll use, say, pericardium 8 to drain, because that's the fire point, so drain fire from that way. And then, do you know the Dr. Tan stuff, like the balance method?
No, I don't do Tan.
Okay. So the way that I think of it is that I multi-function all of these ideas in one go. So Dr. Tan, in my experience, is really good at the sort of symptomology. I'm sure this will like be picking a fight. I might have them emailing me afterwards, but symptomology is great, but it doesn't always address the underlying pattern going unilateral. But what I find is that you get the same expression but on both sides in different ways. So with a gallbladder channel, for example, you'll have one side excess, one side deficient. So I still use the TAN idea of linking all the channels together. It's a really useful framework for looking at how the channels work together and how the whole system fits in. But at the same time, I still use the TCM principle. So in one session, what I'll be doing is draining liver fire with liver 2, pericardium 8. I'll look at the interior, exterior related channels. So I'll use gallbladder, say 41 Sanjiao 5, which if you look at it from a perspective of the six stages and the interconnections, those channels all link together. And then also, as part of that, if you're using Sanjiao 5 and GB41, you're also engaging the 8 extraordinary vessels. And other times, like P6, you're using the lower connecting point, which they have an emotional component. For example, if you're using liver 5, you could use liver 5 too in this scenario. That's going to vent emotions to the exterior. So I really integrate multiple models with my acupuncture treatments all at the same time. Sometimes bring that into the four levels. What are the points that we'd think about if there's heat there? Anger can be generated from qi level heat because the heat there is still damaging the liver. So might be draining stomach 44, nating, or using Li4 in combination with that.
Li11.
And then the formula is long than Xie Gan Tang, really. Or you could do Jia Wei Xiao Yao Wen. It depends on how angry they are and how weak their spleen and stomach is. The thing with long than Xie Gan Tang is that people won't necessarily want to drink it because it's quite bitter. It might make them angry at how bitter the herbs are. Long Dan Sao isn't a nice herb to drink, but I gave it to someone who's very angry recently. They were like, yeah, it was fine. It was delicious.
Black pearls for them. Is this still a male dominant sort of pattern you're seeing with your patients?
I don't think so. No? I think there's a lot of women who have it, but I think I probably wouldn't always use Long Dan Xie Gan Tang. I think there's a lot of people who are angry. I think maybe in the past we associated men with just being the angry ones, but I think modern world, everyone's got something that they're angry about in some way or another. And so you see a combination of all combinations of people. I don't think it's gender specific anymore.
And with your treatments, are you treating solely the excess or do you throw in anything for potential deficiencies that you might find once you've found the excesses?
I'm very fluid in everything. I really try and focus on the idea of what's the landscape of the person in front of me and what's this person really presenting with. And that's always the difficult thing for a student, I would say, or a new practitioner, is that when we start out, we always want a definite answer of what's the answer. And sometimes you're actually, rather than knowing the answer, is that you're asking a question with the treatment. The treatment is a question. How the body responds is the answer. And so often draining the excess it's like having a, you know, that metaphor of the cork being pulled down in the water.
Mm.
That's what the stagnation and the fire is doing. And then if you just take away the excess, just take away the thing which is pulling the cork down, it lets go and it just, your chi pops back up to the surface. But you don't always see that. I had a guy recently who came in for a digestive complaint, and I gave him Lianpo Yin, which is Huang Lian and Hopo, magnolia bark, and Huang Lian is Coptis. And I thought, okay, he's got excess deficient pattern, I'll harmonize with that. And he phoned me up and he was like, I'm having explosive diarrhea. I keep pooing myself, basically.
Magnolia.
And I had that whole reaction of, oh, shit, literally. I had that reaction of, oh, no, like, what do I explain? What's gone wrong? Is there a problem? Are the herbs, is he allergic to the herbs? Is he having a liver, sort of a liver function problem? Went through all of that and said, okay, yeah, let's, maybe you need to stop them. Carried on. So that was like a 14-day prescription. So I usually work in 2-week blocks with herbs.
Mm.
Got to about day 10, and he'd had like a couple of cortisol accidents. I was like, all right, stop them. Just stop them, because I don't want you to keep pooing yourself at work. Like, it's really not what I'm trying to do. Anyway, he stops taking the herbs. Then it's like, yeah, everything's fine now. Everything's fine. And essentially what needed to happen in that instance was that he needed a bit of a purge, I think.
Mm.
He'd got dampness in his digestion that I was a little bit on the fence, didn't know where to go one way or the other. So tried to use Lianpo Yin as a bit more of a gentle method rather than purging. But his bowel purged anyway. And then he's like, it's mostly normal now. It's fine. Mm. And so sometimes what we do doesn't translate directly into textbook. And that can be a pretty intimidating experience for a new practitioner, that someone is suddenly like pooing themselves every day. He was more deficient underlying the excess.
Hmm.
And so I put him on a formula which was then Shang Sha Lu Jun Satang, you know, the six gents or four gents decoction with Shang Sha Mu Shang and Sha Ren I put in. And that really seemed to sort him out. It's fine now, having like a normal bowel movement every day. It's yeah. That's what was revealed by the question. So I think really sometimes it's clearing the excess, sometimes it's tonifying, sometimes you just gotta go in and see what happens.
Yeah, and that's right. Sometimes you have to clear the excess before you can build the deficiency. Okay, so what would be your third main pathophys you see in clinic day to day around Shen?
I think phlegm.
Phlegm. Phlegm misting the mind, or?
What's that, sorry?
Phlegm misting the mind?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think I see it more and more, and I think that comes from the fire, stomach heat side of things, but not entirely convinced that sugar will always cause phlegm, but people have confused lives, yeah, that are run on sugar and coffee and alcohol. You know, we have sugar and coffee to keep us going and alcohol to numb the pain as to why we keep doing these things to ourselves. People work all day, they don't sleep. Creates the environment for phlegm to form. The question with phlegm is always, where is the phlegm forming from? You know, I think about phlegm. Also, you've got phlegm in the mind. There's also the stomach gallbladder disharmony, yeah, that you get with Wen Dan Tang. But yeah, phlegm could be forming from the dampness congealing. Could also be forming from yin being dried up.
Mm.
So there's a lot of different ways that it forms. But I think modern living is going to create a very good environment for phlegm to be forming. Mm. If you look at, you know, incidence of Alzheimer's now, of cancer, these kind of chronic lifestyle illnesses that don't have one particular direction. Some of the presentations of people with Alzheimer's, you can see that they've got four or five different routes to an illness being triggered.
Mm.
And that's where the murkiness of phlegm comes in. So quite often in clinic, if I end up not knowing what I'm doing, because I don't blow my own trumpet, I'm usually like quite good at seeing what's going on with someone, seeing a pattern. And there was a realization I had that sometimes, not every time, but sometimes it's complex. But if it's that complex that we don't know what's going on, and we're confused and our own thinking isn't clear, then it's probably phlegm. Because phlegm mists our mind as much as the patient's mind is misted. Because there's too many things going on that you can't pin it down. It clouds the judgment in all directions. There's a really interesting herb, yuanzhi. No, yuanzhi. Polygala. I can't think what my Western med names are terrible, to be honest. But it's a really interesting herb. So it's warm and it's a little bit acrid, so we have to be careful using people who've got phlegm heat. Most of the phlegm heat are herbs we can't use here because they're minerals. We're not allowed to use minerals and herbs anymore. But yuanzhi has got this really fascinating use, which in research they found that it can help with memory recall in PTSD. So you can take the herb and, or at least one of the active components of the herb, and it will prevent that moment of where someone relives an experience in a present day life moment. And it helped me think about what phlegm is, because phlegm is almost an extension of when the chi is stagnated for some reason. So how I started thinking about phlegm is almost on a neurobiochemical way of seeing things, that we have a thought that we think for a long period of time, and when we have a trauma, it lodges in our brain as chi stagnation. So chi is stagnating like a within the nervous system, within our brain. And phlegm over time is how that keeps getting repeated and repeated and repeated until it becomes our identity. So the phlegm almost takes over who we are and what we think about ourselves.
Mm.
And that's why phlegm misting the mind is a difficult pattern to treat, because it's almost that the phlegm is integrated with who we think we are. And then we don't know who we are because the phlegm is there. Mm. Just a theory I have. It's not, you won't read that in a book. That's something I'd probably do my PhD on, if anything else, if I could do a PhD on that. But the two herbs that I've used a lot for these kind of patterns where someone's that clad, and I think it would be like Shichangpu and Yuanzhi. And then Wendantang, you know, with Juru, it's a good kind of cooling and clearing phlegm heat kind of pattern. With sometimes put in hopo, because that's regulating qi and helps with phlegm as well. So more of a Bansha hopo tang idea with qi stagnation and phlegm as well. Point wise, if I was to treat someone with phlegm and acupuncture, stomach 40 is always the way, because you're quite limited in acupuncture. But I think pericardium 5 has got an open the orifices from phlegm kind of function as well. So I would do that.
It depends on where the phlegm is too, as to what you'd be using, yeah. Whether you'd be addressing gallbladder, you could be using points on the head.
Yeah. I'll quite often use that same combination, GB41, Sanjiao-5. Mm. Actually, the best treatment for clearing phlegm and heat and phlegm mist in the mind that I've used, I think, is, do you know any of the five element, you know, the Worsley style five element treatments?
Mm, yes.
You know, like the internal dragons?
Yes, yeah.
Internal dragons, if you look at the functions of the points of internal dragons, they're basically draining phlegm fire from the heart and stomach.
Mm.
That's basically what those points are doing. And that's probably the best.
Yeah, they're powerful treatments, those ones.
Yeah. I don't know about you, I've had people burst into full-on baby tears.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's really full-on. So that's probably the way to clear phlegm with acupuncture, I would say.
And so, I mean, with phlegm, yeah, like you discussed a little bit about the diet and how it can be such a difficult thing for some people to change, especially when it's so habitual to who they know, and especially if they're trying to fill a void with food as well. But I'm certainly strict when it comes to dietetics. If there is some component of dampness or phlegm with sugars or caffeine, to a degree, you know, obviously working in with the patient. But I just find by addressing the diet and utilising a little bit of herbal medicine alongside the acupuncture, it just takes the treatment to the next level. And if it's left undiscussed, you know, there's no room for the patient to improve. So I think opening up that conversation about how much coffee you're having or alcohol or sugars, or even just educating the patient around types of sugars and stuff, it can shift a lot. And sometimes the patient just, they don't know, they're not educated enough to understand that is too much coffee or these sugars are actually causing their digestion to accumulate. So it's a conversation to definitely make sure we touch on.
Definitely. I think they actually, there's something when they're coming, it's a way of, I don't know, said words without having a sentence then. I'm trying to think what I was trying to say. It's a way of them showing investment in the process as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing that we want with patients, especially when they're that knotty in their condition, that we want them to start making changes. I often try and I'll leave it longer. I'll say to people with herbs, for example, I'll say let the herbs do the work to start off with and then change, because often adding something in is easier than taking things out, and get them to replace herbs with a coffee. But you know, when you've really got a patient who's going to do well because they start coming in and they've made changes anyway without you having to tell them.
Yeah, and you can fine tune it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's that enthusiasm, which is their Shen. Their Shen has awoken and gone, I'm not going to eat junk anymore.
Mm.
I'm going to reduce my exercise down and exercise in a more healthy way.
Mm. Yeah, you have to meet the patient where they're at. I mean, I'm a naturopath as well, so people know they're going to expect dietary changes as well as part of the intervention. Can we maybe... can you chat a little bit about how you actually treat? Like, what does a treatment look like for you? How long are you spending? Are you doing front, back, one side, your needle retention time and the frequency of treatments?
Sure. So with acupuncture, I'm working 6-week blocks. So I say to people, usually they should, you know, if they're just starting out, they should be seeing acupuncture working within 6 weeks. We want to see improvements generally. Mm. I usually tell people my aim is one session, all problem solved, but I have to be realistic about what's going on there. So I do want people to see improvements. I like people to improve quickly so they really get the benefit, rather than not seeing anything and coming for 6 months and nothing's happened. That's not a treatment goal for me. I want people to walk in the door, come back the next week and say I'm 50% better at least. So I try in the first session to solve everything, and it doesn't always work out. And then I would say, welcome weekly for 6 weeks. Then if everything's improving well, we'll space out to fortnightly and wind down to monthly, and then 6 months. And then it's like an MOT, you know, your service on your car basically once a year then. In a session, I usually leave an hour. I work one-to-one. I was doing that before lockdown. I don't really do multi-bed. There is an idea to do multi-bed, but not right now. What I do in an hour largely depends on a person. If they need back and front, I'll do back and front. But quite often what I'll do is go with reducing points first. Start off, if I'm clearing phlegm, I'm going to needle stomach 40 first and I'm going to strongly reduce it. And I'll keep going back all the way through the session to keep on. And then tonifying points, for example, I'll use that in and out kind of method.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to just do it quickly. Sometimes I use a more gentle approach with less stimulation. But something that I tend to do all the way through is keep stimulating. And I tell patients that it's wrong when they say that acupuncture, like, you shouldn't feel anything, because I want patients to feel stuff in their treatments. I'm not extreme as like the Nugent heads and going to gallbladder 41 and stimulating so it activates all the way up the channel, but I at least get sensation quite strong locally in the point. And that's because I want people to connect to their chi, into their body, but also it puts them into relaxation response, or what psychotherapists might call like soothe system. And we just have this really advanced way of putting someone into their soothe system. And soothe system is where everything gets better, because all of the threat system stuff that comes with poor habits from childhood trauma, for example, is that people come out of that and they're in the present. So my treatments are going to be getting the chi sort of two or three times in a session. Sometimes these days, if it's a combination of MSK stuff manifesting as an emotion, I'll do up to like 30 needles. In the past, I used to be very, very minimalist, and I would try and do as much as I could with a few needles, but I've broadened out a lot, and I'll use front and back treatments as well. I encourage people. It's more so between R, but sometimes I'll say to people, like, if you need to swear, call me all the names you like. I've heard them all. Like, I'll get people crying sometimes and swearing and all kinds of stuff between R, because, you know, when it's that level of physical pain, sometimes you need it. What else? Herbs-wise, I tend to work in a two-week cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my aim is always, if I can give you one batch of herbs and it's problem solved, great. That's what I'd love to see happen. But realistically, what I usually say to people is, let's do 6 weeks, two-week blocks. If everything's settled down, after the 6 weeks, we'll do a month and we'll try and then maintain for 2 months. And then if everything's better, we'll wind down. If not, we'll go longer. But I always explain to people, you know, if it's more chronic, it's going to take longer. If it's more severe, it's going to take longer.
Mm.
But my aim since starting to practice has been to refine my clinical reasoning and diagnostic skills so much that I hit the diagnosis on the head first time. And then what happens is basically a cascade effect, and we see everything happen quite quickly. But I put too much pressure on myself to actually achieve that level of results quickly. The other thing people get, last one, people usually get a mouthful from me whilst they've got the needles in. I'll put the needles in, and then whatever it is that the patient is coming with, I usually will wrap on about that in different ways and look at different kinds of lifestyle advice to improve it. That can be diet. The other day, someone was coming to me because they're an ME patient who was having some trouble with their work on social media. And that's telling them you need more boundaries around your work, for example. Or it's learning how to turn obstacles into opportunities. There's different ways in which I approach the self-care talk for people. Sometimes it's given them meditation. I had someone recently who's severe anxiety and taught them through some basic Qigong breathing methods to really relax them and how to breathe through their feet and focus their attention, like their breath is coming out through the feet and drawing the breath up into the Dantian, that kind of idea, which really helped her anxiety. Sometimes it's just walking on the grass, but I'll often in those times be quite challenging about what people are doing to bring about their patterns and try and give an understanding of the TCM framework and how it fits with that, how it's influencing the share and all of these kind of things.
Yeah, I like the benchmark around the 6 weeks and then reassessing from that, because I think sometimes, you know, people do expect miracles in 1 or 2 sessions, or, you know, a lot of the research is around 12 weeks of two sessions in a week. So we definitely need to, I think, set up expectations realistically around treatments and how the patient can do their own homework. Those great tools like Qigong and diet and lifestyle are so powerful. What are some of your go-to resources for your education around the Shen? What has been some of your best tools to learn all about the Shen?
So that Wang Ju Yi book is quite useful. There's some useful thoughts in there. So that's applied channel theory. Dragon Rises, Red Bird Flies was a good one on Leon Hammer. I almost failed an exam because I read that book instead of focusing on, I think it was Biomed or something like that. back in the that's good. It's 5 element, but it's good.
Yeah, that's great.
The Giovanni Psyche book is like, people like Giovanni has created our profession, really. Like even though there's a lot of repetition in there, it's still a really good book. I think there's I think you had it before, the Rossi book. That's a good one. Aspects and Spirit by Elizabeth Rochat de la Vallée, and The 7 Emotions by her. They're really good books, but they're just heavy going. There's a new one that's just come out. Oh, I've got it on the shelf there. One second. I've got too many books.
Don't we all?
I really like this book.
Chinese Medicine Psychology.
Chinese Medicine Psychology. Which has only come out like last year, but this has got some really good explanations of the Shen, and it's clinical. It's not too repetitive.
Who's that by?
It's by Professor Chu Li Feng and Dr. Mary Garvey. And then I've got this one, The Psycho-Emotional Pain and the 8 Extraordinary Vessels by Yvonne Farrell, but I've never read it. So I can't really say that this one, but I plan to read it at some point. Anything else?
That's some good resources right there, though, definitely, for anyone wanting to invest some more time into learning about Shen. And Giovanni has some great courses too online that are quite good around the Shen, the psycho-emotional stuff.
Yeah, I've never done any of those. I think I'm trying to think what else I've done.
For people that don't get through the books that they've bought.
Yeah. I did get into 5 element acupuncture for a while.
It fits nicely with the Shen stuff, though, the 5 elements. You know, it beautifully goes into everything that we need to connect it all. So I do think it's worthy to invest time into the 5 elements.
I think there's an idea that you have to treat Shen, you have to know 5 elements, but actually when I've gone through the Elizabeth Rochat de Vallée books, it's just that we don't, in our courses here at least, I don't know about there, but we don't touch on the Shen enough.
So you just get
depression, you just get liver qi stagnation, and in our learning, it's like, oh, these are the patterns of anxiety, these are the patterns of liver qi stagnation, and you never get the broader understanding of the mechanisms. So I went through, for a lecture, I went through and basically created a load of pattern diagrams for all of the emotional expressions, like how you can get anger from the kidneys, how you get anger from the gallbladder, and how those differ. And that is really probably where I'm going to take things going forward, do a little bit more elaborating on that, because I've not seen it around. No one's really doing it.
Great, that sounds good. So for those wanting to find out a bit more about that when you're when you get on top of those projects, where can our student listeners, practitioners or patients find you?
The best place to find me would be either on Facebook, would be Philip Trubshaw Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine. Yep, that's my name. And on Instagram, if you want to find me there, just go and see Phil. That's mostly where I post my sort of Chinese medicine memes.
Hilarious memes. Take the piss out of
the whole thing. And then if you want to be taught by me, you could try and sign up to the herbs course at the Northern College of Acupuncture. But that's only based in the UK. Do some online consultations, things like that. I don't have an online course that I'm selling at the moment. That's still in the process. But yeah, those are the best places to find me.
That's great. No, we really appreciate your insight into the Shen. It's a topic I think that everyone's really keen to learn about and go deeper into, but you know, there's not that many practitioners that specialize around the Shen. So it's been great having this conversation with you. And part one, make sure you listen to that, because that was deep. That was great.
I'm happy if people are listening and they want to talk more about Shen. Like, they can always drop me an email. It might take a long time for me to get back, but I'll do as best I can. But conversations around that, yeah.
That's very generous of you. Hopefully you don't get flooded with emails. Not that my following's that huge, but I'm always mindful of that.
Q&A.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, no, it's been really good chatting with you, Phil. So thanks so much again for coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. I have been a practitioner of naturopathic and Chinese medicine for over a decade. I have a master's degree of health science and I am an academic lecturer at Australia's leading natural medicine college. I am available worldwide online for bookings. Simply go to sandyrosshealth.com.